Good evening, sir.
Yo, yo, this is episode 54 of the Beef and Bitcoin podcast with your host, Brett and CH. Today's topics, looks like Litecoin's having a little bit of an issue with a potential mining death spiral. Maybe not a death spiral, but it's important to talk about the economics of mining and, you know, what's going on with Litecoin, especially after their halving in August. There's been our good friend Peter McCormack had a funny tweet about DAI and decentralized finance. So we'll touch on that a little bit. And then also I saw a great thread on, you know, trying to sell the next top and, you know, best case and worst case scenarios that could happen to you when trying to sell the next top. And as I was reading it, I was like, this is exactly what would happen to me if I tried to sell the next top, being the worst case of scenarios. But how you doing this week, man?
I'm doing good. Tomorrow is Monday, so another start to another week. And you're always asking what's going to happen this week.
Always fun to have a new week starting tomorrow.
it's like, what's going to happen this week? And that's why, if you don't understand, like, it's like every week now, it's like, what is going to... You know, I think there's a lot in geopolitical stuff. And if you don't mind pausing here, sir, as I said, the wind's really bad and my door blew open. I would back in 1 second.
Yeah, no problem. So I'll get started on some of this Litecoin business. So it looks like Litecoin has lost 60% of its hash rate since the halving on August 5th, 2019. And the Bitcoin price has decreased 22%. Litecoin has decreased 22% when measured in Bitcoin and 40% when measured in USD from the halving on August 5th of this year. So Litecoin's sitting around 60-ish bucks today, maybe like 64-ish. So pretty much, you know, the mining subsidy got cut in half, right? So when the block reward is the mining subsidy, which is the amount of coins that are given away to the miner, and then the fees for that block, all of the accumulated fees from people transacting over the network. So it's subsidy plus fees equals the block reward. So now you have, you know, every halving for any coin that has a halving, the subsidy gets cut in half. So in other words, all that revenue that they were earning gets cut in half instantly as soon as the halving happens. So since then, we've seen the hash rate of Litecoin just plummet 60%. And typically what you'd expect to see is the hash rate to decline until miners completely capitulate and the price drops, you know, low enough that then the hash rate comes back online because now it's profitable again to start mining, and, you know, the price starts to increase again. So it looks like Litecoin is in one of those death spiral like moments where either the price of Litecoin needs to increase substantially, which, you know, I think you and I would maybe agree, if Litecoin drops far enough, I'm sure some speculators are going to just step in and start buying, right?
Yeah, so it happens every time. And then, you know, who knows, could be wrong, but like we were talking about, like, and I guess we'll get into it in a second about Ethereum. You know, if like Ethereum ever had an issue and just completely imploded, it's like, what, I don't know how many ERC-20 tokens there are still floating around. They're still, yeah, and at some price that people are bag holding, or, you know, so it's like, what, we said 90%. I don't know. I'm just throwing a number out there, but it's a high percentage number of the amount of altcoins out there.
Oh yeah, it's insane. But yeah, when you think about the whole point of bringing this up was more to talk about the economics of mining, and it's just, yeah, in my opinion, it's probably the most cutthroat industry you could possibly be in. I mean, you're really competing on the cost of electricity that you can get. And Steve Barber had put up a quick thread talking about S9s, which is a popular Bitmain miner for Bitcoiners, and that their break-even point looks to be around 6.3 cents per kilowatt hour, which is pretty low, at least in the United States. And most people can't get that. So when you have miners competing on electricity prices, I think they don't really care what they're mining. They just want to be able to make a profit. So with the Bcash has its halving, I think, a few weeks before Bitcoin's halving in May of 2020. So the speculation is, okay, well, if what happens to the price of then Bcash and other coins that are proof of work coins that have a halving, like do all the people who are mining those shit coins, they obviously have access to cheap electricity or else they wouldn't be mining. Do you then kind of dump that hardware and switch over to mining Bitcoin? Like, I don't know. Tell me what you think about that. If you're a miner and you're mining shit coins and they're just keep trending down and down and down, what do you then do with your electricity that you have access to?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I've seen people who, there's people who just like mine, you know, I don't know if they mine both or all coins, but I see people who, I can't remember his name right now on Twitter, but he always talks about mining. He's a pretty big Twitter account. And he's been doing it for a while. And he talks about just like mining coins no one wants. And then if he's right on a few, I don't know how much mining equipment he has, because he could have a lot of mining equipment. Think about it. If you invest like 10 grand into it, 20, 30 grand, you know what I mean? You could have a decent amount of stuff. I don't know what your electricity costs would be. Probably pretty ridiculous, but still. You could have a lot of stuff mining, and especially stuff that doesn't have like a high hash rate or whatever. In that sense, it could really, there's obviously downside that that thing never goes up and goes down or whatever. But then, like, if you bag a couple and you mine a shit ton, because you're one of, I don't know how many people mining, but, we've talked about before, a lot of these altcoins have very low hash rates and they're very easy to basically 51% attack.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good point. I think we're the economics.
Speculative mining, I guess.
Yeah, well, no, that's pretty much what it is. And I think the thing that I like, if I take it to that next logical step, is like, if you're a speculative miner, I'm going to assume that you already have half decent electricity rates, or else you wouldn't be mining at all. And you're going to take all those lessons that you learned from mining and then just do it on the coin where you can be more profitable. So, for Litecoin miners, what they would need is they'd need to dump their ASICs for more efficient ones. The problem is those more efficient ones might not really exist. So that's where, I mean, we're going to see the experiment play out, right? Like do proof of work coins start kind of falling off to lower levels, just because there's no transactional demand. And that's what kind of Trace Mayer was saying. He said, as these halvings continue, that's mining revenue that just goes right out the window for the miners. So they need to then offset that with transaction fee revenue. And if nobody's using the fucking chain, there's no transaction fee revenue. So that's when people decide to call it quits. And it's like, it's cool because you're literally watching a free market kind of at work, right? Like you're seeing the prices play out on these various cryptocurrencies, and miners are stepping in doing the thing. And if there's no demand on the chain, they're just going to switch coins and kind of go from there. So I've heard theories like pretty much you'll end up with, just because of the competition for the cheap electricity rates, like if people are going to mine, you'll eventually start to converge on kind of one proof of work coin that's the only one that makes sense to mine, because you're never going to have enough demand, transactional demand, on these other chains to make it worth your while to start mining.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you can, not saying Bitcoin's a sure bet, but you can bet on the thing that's the most prominent. And but obviously, like, I don't even know what it would cost to mine Bitcoin, if it's even worth it at this point, because it's just such a large industry, comparative to everything else. And that's why I think we see this speculative mining here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the people who decide that they're going to like stay with it, like that's the decision you need to make. Right?
I mean, you think about some of these like just like warehouses filled with like, or, rooms filled with just like, just mining rigs, I was going to say graphics cards, but it's ASICs now.
Right.
And people use graphics cards, I guess, for other altcoins and stuff like that. But ASICs would be for Bitcoin now, because graphics cards are null, I guess, pretty much.
Yeah. It's just crazy to see. And I think it's a good thing that you have this free market that is mining, right? And like you can see you can see how the business cycle works in mining, because the inefficient miners just get wiped away. And we don't see that when you and I talk shit about tons of, like, you know, any company that IPOs and doesn't make money. Like, you can just sustain these bad businesses for, like, really long periods of time. Whereas with mining, you can't. Like, all of a sudden it's unprofitable and boom, like, you're done. That's it. Like, the inefficient miners just get wiped away and consolidate, and then it's only the strong survive. So I do like that aspect of mining, and I think anybody who thinks about getting into it needs to, like, seriously do their homework about what they can get their electricity prices for, because you need to be able to sustain long bear markets where your break-even point is, like, low. You know what I mean? Like, you saw people's miners' break-even point was right around $6,000, obviously, for Bitcoin when it dumped in, what, in November, December of 2018? Like,
yeah, it was early November.
You had to take hash rate offline. Like, they weren't making any money. They stopped making money right around 6K, and then boom, we dumped to the point where they were making money. At 3K, the hash rate came back online, and that was the bottom, I guess. We're going to learn more. We're only, like, three cycles in, right? So we're going to have way more data and information on how the hash rate moves with bull and bear markets and miner capitulation and all this stuff. Like, it is going to be fun to look at and study as the bubbles continue to blow up and burst. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, the longer, as we talked about, the longer it's around, the more likely it'll stay, type of Lindy effect thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what's around in 5 years from now. You know, 2025, 2024, you could say. It's pretty, you know, there's a whole new decade. You know, what does crypto's legacy become? We're gonna look back at this in 10 years, and what does it become? Does it become actually, I mean, the cat's out of the bag, but what does it, you know, 10 years from now?
What does that look like?
Right? Yeah. Because people aren't gonna stop working on this stuff.
No, there's too many, like, brilliant minds in the space. There's too much money behind it. And also there's, like, too much at stake now.
Yeah, there's not a lot. Well, people, like, realize there's a lot. There's, yeah, like, wow, this is the next thing.
Right, right. It has that feel of, like, the next.
And it might take, like, 20, 30 years to play out, type of thing.
And that's the thing that you and I always talk about with, like, just the internet in general and how long it really takes. Everybody's seen that clip that's been going around about Bezos, like that hidden clip from, like, 1997, where he's like, yeah, I decided books were the thing that I was going to sell because, like, that has the most categories. And I think, you know, I might be able to leverage this thing called the internet to then sell them to people who want books. And he specifically said in that little clip, like, if you can still use legacy ways right now that are more efficient, like, you should do that. Like, using the internet to solve a business problem was, like, still really niche in 1997. And now here we are, you know, 20 years later.
Amazon's everything.
And, like, right, Amazon's everything. But I think, like, ideas that, like, Uber wouldn't have worked in 2001, right? Because you didn't have internet access on your cell phone. Like, apps weren't a thing.
Yeah, so taxi.
It takes so much time for business. Like, you need prerequisites to exist. Like, even for Bitcoin, like, you need a mobile phone for it to make sense for, like, globally people are using Bitcoin, right? If cell phones with internet access didn't exist, like, there is no Bitcoin. You need all of these other prerequisites for, like, innovation to flourish and new business models to come to fruition and all the great stuff that we love about using the internet to be a real thing.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, the internet's history is so long. I mean, it easily can say it starts in the late 60s, but you can say it even draws back further with, like, earlier inventions, you know, they tie to.
Right, just like telecommunication, literally.
Exactly,
like,
telegram.
Like, that's the start.
Yeah, exactly, like, stuff like that. So it's, you can draw it back to the 1880s. You know, this was a 100-and-some-year process.
Yeah, dude, this shit takes a long time. It is when you think about it like that, it just gets more insane.
Yeah, but, you know, the internet itself, you can say late 60s, so it's still, you know, you're talking about, like, 70 years plus of development, really.
Yep, right, to get
not
to
70,
where we
excuse
are today.
Me, 50. Jeez. But, you know, so it's still a while.
You know? Yeah, and then maybe call it 30-ish years of more commercialized
yeah, exactly.
internet and 20 years of where like just barely mainstream starts to get on, where you have 7 to 10% of the population who got on the internet. That was probably around, 98, 99. You're 10% of people in the US were online, and like that was your tipping point. And then boom, all of a sudden the majority of the population has access to the internet. But it also took 20 years later to like really pick up steam. But I mean, with when it comes to Bitcoin and adoption, we're just not even close to being there yet to that tipping point. But it was cool to see the rush in 2017. So I'm assuming the next time the price starts to go up again, that the new group of individuals that jump in, like that pool of people starts to get bigger each time. So I think that's just something to keep in mind when you think about number go up. Hopefully, number of people who buy Bitcoin also go up in that same amount of time.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the internet thing, and like, I think I remember like in middle school, like they used to like Wikipedia used to be blocked, which was like, it which it kind of is annoying because it's like Wikipedia just has a bunch of links to sources you can use. You
Right.
know, it just puts them all in one place instead of, having to scroll through endless Google pages. And I was just thinking about that. I don't know why. It was just pretty interesting, to think about like where we've come, and that was, 11 years ago, 10 years ago. When people were still worried about people going on the internet and researching things. And I don't know how it's changed in public school system, but it's still probably pretty strict on what you can go look at and stuff like that. And obviously I get it, you don't want kids going onto porn sites in school, but still there's, a lot of stuff is still but the internet's one of those things that can be it's a lot of people are now starting to realize how much you can leverage it versus anything else, And a lot of people are waking up to this, I think, slowly.
Yeah, it's a fantastic tool, and it's an amazing piece of technology that has absolutely done
I mean, any
more.
business. Sorry, let me go ahead, finish your
No, yeah,
sentence.
I was just gonna say overall it's done. Even though we can talk about all the dystopian type shit that's happened, like overall it's done more good than harm in this case. Like any technology, it's who yields it and uses it. But yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say that any company over the last 25, 30 years that's really thrived has used the internet. They haven't not. If they haven't, they failed.
Right, that's kind of that digitization shift that we've seen, and that's I hate the term, but like insurtech or fintech, like it's a really shitty term. It's more like everyone's coming to the point where like, oh yeah, we've got to really leverage the internet when we're building these businesses. And I think that's a good segue into the next topic, talking about this DeFi fail. So there's this big push for decentralized finance, which I don't even know what that means, but to me, when if
Bro,
somebody asks me what
decentralize
it
it. Decentralize. Come on. Hop on the train. Decentralize. I'm gonna say
like
decentralize until you just hop on. It's like that's what it is. Like they don't have any explanation. They just say decentralize.
yeah,
That's
they think that's like a good selling point or pitch
it
to
is a
like,
selling
oh,
point
this is
to
a good
like people who
idea,
don't do research.
right?
They're like, oh, decentralize. I don't know.
It's, I've gotten to the point
I'm
when
such a
I,
nihilist.
yeah, when someone talks about decentralized finance to me, I think of like, to me, Bitcoin's decentralized finance. It's just decentralized money. You don't need everything to be decentralized, but you need specific tools to be decentralized. Money might be a good one that's worth being decentralized. You could say the same about like very small city states and localization, like these decentralized ways to kind of govern yourselves more from like a political standpoint. I understand those things, but yeah, it's just not necessary. But anyway, Peter McCormack tweeted about DeFi, and he slowly but surely really starting to understand a lot of this shit coinery. And he said in this tweet, so DAI allows people who can't to get credit. But to get credit, they're required to 150% collateralize with ETH. So normies who want credit today need to first buy 150% worth of ETH for the amount of money that they require. I mean, it's funny that he said it, but pretty much as an example would be if you're a person who for whatever reason can't get a loan, and you need $1,000. The only way to get $1,000 would be to buy $1,500 worth of ETH and then stake it, and then and only then could you get the loan. And when I think about that, one, I think it's insane, because if you're the kind of person who can't get a loan, how are you supposed to get more money for the loan amount that you're trying to take out, right? I mean, you'd think if you had 150% of the of to collateralize what you're taking out, you'd have enough money to not need the loan. Or am I thinking about that wrong?
No, you have more. No, you have more money, so you're putting more in.
Right, like why would you have enough already? Like why would you collateralize it?
Dude, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know why you do that, because that's a really good question at that point. I didn't think about it that way. I'm just saying, like, because I was thinking about more in a sense, like, you have the money, so what would be the issue? And you're putting more in, but now I'm looking at what you said.
It's like you already have enough at that point, and now you need it. Like all to me, all it does is it creates friction, right? Now you need to go buy this other thing to, and then put that somewhere else to then get the thing that you actually need to go spend, which is dollars, but it's dai, and I don't know who accepts dai anyway. So like the whole thing gets weird. I understand what they're trying to do. I just think it's not. It's either too early or it will never be a thing, because, I don't know. And it just gets worse because they're talking about switching. Dai is talking about switching to a like multi-collateralized system where basically instead of just staking ETH, you can stake other shit coins and use other shit coins as collateral. And I don't know if that reminds you of anything, but it reminds me of the subprime loan crisis
Yeah.
where the collateral was trash,
Yeah.
literal junk,
Yeah, that's what
and
we're.
it went up in flames and then boom, just like that. Everything gets liquidated, and I'm gonna feel bad when I this is my question to you. Like, do you think DAI as a stable coin will just blow up eventually with all this complex multi-collateralization BS?
That wouldn't be good for it, because if that's, I don't know how much percentage that would make up of it, but if that's a high percentage of all this collateral is Ethereum, and it just, if Ethereum just implodes for whatever reason, I don't know why it would, but something as simple as, like if we talked about earlier, the fake Vitalik death just plummeting like 10% in a day, stuff like that, it could just, what's restraining it? And if it does implode, that's not just, being an issue for Ethereum, that's everything on Ethereum, and coin market cap would have like 100 coins.
Yeah, no, it can
Instead
so
of
much
like,
of
I don't
it,
even know what it is now. It's probably an atrocious number looking at
dude.
now.
When you said that, it just makes me think of a lot of the stuff that is linked together, and they're automating a lot of this stuff with
Oh.
smart contract type of things where like you're automatically liquidated on your like DAI contracts if ETH dips below a certain percentage, like the liquidation is triggered just like they would on BitMEX or something. So you can really have a cascading effect of just contracts being liquidated. Even you could have people betting on the other side, right? So miners might then bet on the other side and say, short ETH, take all their hash rate off the network, dump it, all these collateralized loans get liquidated, and then they buy the dip. You know what I mean? Like it can get pretty fucking insane.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about, like, it's now almost 5,000. I don't know
Right.
how much have value, but when I go down to 100, it's at 40 million market cap. So
Yeah, it's still a lot of this is still like way
it's just
overvalued. Like, I don't know
$40
how
is a
to
lot of
say it.
money. And like, it's
Yeah.
like, yeah, no, it's just ridiculous. I haven't looked at coin market cap in forever.
Neither have I actually. This is the first time I've looked at it in a long time. I
Yeah.
used to check it every single day,
Every
probably like
fucking
25
minute.
times a day. Yeah.
Dude, like in December, you're just like, what the fuck is going on, dude? You should just like look, and it's just like,
One of my favorite things is if you, there's like a historical thing you can do on CoinMarketCap, and you can go back and look and see what was around in 2013, 14, 15, 16. And like, it's funny because you won't recognize a lot of the coins on there. And I think that should be like a signal that there's a good chance that some of your favorite ones,
will
like
not come
people
back.
5 years from now, will have never heard of. They'll be like, I don't, what was EOS? Like, I don't know what that, what was Cardano? What was, all the stuff that ends up just going away. Yeah, Tron, like,
Tron, look at just a spike,
yeah.
35 cents.
Yeah, a lot of it's just like it's just marketing
from
dollars
nothing,
behind
from
scams.
nothing. 1500% in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't even know, dude. I'm just gonna look at this because I remember it was some stupid number.
Yeah, Tron's a great shitcoin to look
Theoretically, like 170x in like
Yeah.
fucking 2 weeks, like a month,
Yeah, it's
basically. Ninja,
insane.
insane, insane. And that's, dude, like I remember just like Twitter was exploding.
Oh yeah, everything was going nuts.
This is just like it was the craziest thing. It's a ghost town.
Yeah. It's a good reminder to me of like what that euphoria kind of
It
feels like.
looks
And
like, yeah.
yeah, it's just good to like step back, 'cause that was like my first bull run, right? That was our first bull run dealing with this kind of stuff. I'll know it better when I see it the next time around.
You're like, oh, I
I
remember
yeah.
this. Yeah.
Right. I know we talk about that all the time, but it's just a good reminder for all the listeners out there. Like you'll feel it. Like you'll know when we're really getting into it, when Uber drivers or whoever are talking about it, or the barber or whatever. It's just know the signs of when things are getting a little interesting, which I think is a good that's a good segue into the next topic.
Yeah, I think that what going higher or
Selling the next top.
yeah, no, well, like even like when you think I was gonna mention like, I guess this is part of the next topic too is like, what happens when you hit 20K again? Because that's like I know most people know that's what it hit, and I think if that does happen, it's like you gotta step back and say where is this going? Because that 20K, a 10x from there is 200K, so it's like. And that's just it's so it's like the swings are going to be ridiculous. Like you could be talking $10,000 days up, and then $5,000 day down the next day, and then $10,000 up the next. So I think people are going to really just it's going to get retarded.
Yeah, no,
It's going to
exactly.
get like that's the only way to describe it. And I know it's a bad word to use, but that's the best way to describe it. It's like it's going to get absurd if it goes there.
Yeah, and I think it's good to like when you think about that 20K price point, that's no different than the $1,000 or $1,200 price point when Bitcoin breached that in the beginning of 2017. That was new all-time highs again. That was like we got there. And people thought that was insane pricing, and then it went to 20K. So like now 20K is that new, like, oh, if we can just get it back then back above that, then it's kind of sky's the limit, which is kind of crazy, just as you said. And this is just such a good segue into the topic of selling the next top. And I saw this thread from Full Time Bitcoin, and I guess we can read a couple of these tweets, because I was just reading it and thinking, like, this is exactly what would happen to me if I try to sell the next top. And the thread was pretty good. It pretty much gives you two different examples of best case scenario and worst case scenario. So I'll read a couple of these, and you jump in whenever you want.
Go ahead.
So so he goes, so you're smart enough to know not to trade Bitcoin, so you stack sats, but you're still considering selling a little in the next cycle. So maybe you sell 5 to 10% of your stash near the next top. You wait for an absurd mayor multiple, and then you buy back and you have more sats. Like, genius idea, right? Sell the top, buy the bottom. Perfect. And anybody could do that. So he's like, all right, here's best case scenario. You have 10 Bitcoin, you sell one of them at 250K top, as an example. You take your 250K, you buy back in at 50K, and you got five more Bitcoin. All right, perfect. Now you have 14. Like, smooth move. You crushed it. And then that's assuming zero capital gains. So then he goes into a capital gains example. So, okay, let's take the same example. Let's assume you sell at 250K, you pay your long-term capital gains of, call it 60,000, and you buy 3.75 BTC, which is 2.75 more than you had. Okay, that's pretty good. And that's Just to take a pause here for a second, that's my biggest issue with trying to sell the next top is dealing with like just the capital gains events and like how do you of like then you're handing money over on the 14th or the 15th of April, like regardless of you know, if you're trading on a legitimate exchange and know your information will make its way to the IRS someday, like that's realistically what you're going to deal with. And if you've accumulated enough BTC, your threat model starts to change where you're like, all right, if I want to not go to prison, how, like, what do you disclose and what don't you? And I think a lot of people who sell like TA courses don't tell people that for very specific reasons, or else nobody would trade. And you know, then he starts, this is where I was thinking of you and me, where he's like, you've been paying attention to policy, Fed policy recently, you know, global macro is insane. We're in uncharted territories. Like, you know, you got to stack sats, protect yourself, all that good stuff. All right, I want to scroll down to all right. So here's the worst case scenario. All right, so best case scenario, you time it perfectly, you sell the top, you pay your taxes, and you buy left whatever you can left over, assuming you can catch the bottom perfectly. Okay. So worst case scenario is we touch 250K, that's your target. Your fingers on the trigger, you to sell, but you second guess yourself. What if it keeps going up, right? If it's at 250, why wouldn't it keep going higher? So you decide to sleep on it. It's at 200K, right? We dipped overnight and it's dropping fast, and you quickly sell to BTC in this case at 190K because you want to make sure you have enough to so that you can buy back lower when it dips. And you're sure this is the top, whatever, whatever. Now you've got an even bigger tax bill, and then the market ends up ripping up higher. So it jumps back up to 250K, 300K, 400K, 500K. And you're like, fuck, I can't believe I just sold at 200K. Like, it reminds me so much of 2017, like when we're pumping to new all-time highs. And I thought 6K was like the high, right? In 2017, I think it was in September or August, I saw 6K and I was like, that's it. Like there's no shot we're going any higher. I thought 2K was insane. Like 6K, three times that amount. There's just no way we're going any higher. And we ripped through that. I don't know if, yeah, you can bring that up on the chart for a sec.
Yeah, that's the daily of the Bitcoin March in 2017.
Yeah, 20, so more to the left, I think.
Go to the left more?
No. You're there. You're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, just like it becomes impervious is what it becomes.
Yeah, like there, you just start to realize you don't know what the top or the bottom is. And just as he talks about this example, like it hits your target, you don't stick to your trading plan, it dips, you sell because you're scared, and then the thing just fucking face rips and takes off again. And now and then you end up buying back higher, right? And I think a lot of people will do that where they, you know, they're inexperienced, they can't stick with their trading plan or whatever, and they're selling lower, buying back in higher, just getting like that famous meme of like the Bogdanov guy of like the guy trading and like pumping and dumping it, and him just like losing all of his money. Like that's what happens in reality. Because I remember listening to people and seeing them DM me about them losing their shirts, like trying to trade these insane markets, and it's like, people have no business doing that kind of stuff. And this, but I wanted to get your take because I know you and I might think a little bit differently about this. But like,
I
when
just
you're
looking
de
at, I was gonna say, look at this. So the Bitcoin crash at like the end of October.
yeah.
And then the Bitcoin pump kind of coincides. I guess this is the monthly chart on the dollar index, but it kind of coincides with the, I guess, well, maybe not the dollar did dump, but I don't know. Just a little correlation, probably not that correlated. I'm just kind of looking at it the monthly, but still pretty interesting. And then dollar's pumping the last week and Bitcoin's kind of going down here. So I don't know. Gold's been getting pretty wrecked by it though.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. I don't know if you'd say like the more store of value an asset is, it's inversely correlated to like the increase in the money supply. I don't know. So as the money, or I guess they are correlated, right? So if the money supply is increasing, gold's going to go up.
Yeah.
And if it's tightening.
I don't know if you mentioned this tweet from the Al Dukes. People can see it on the YouTube, but if you're not, I'll just read it off. He said, what would a collapse of 90% of global currencies do to the Bitcoin price? Well, I'd rather have Bitcoin if I lived in one of those countries, but in short term, that's likely to just make the dollar stronger by a lot. You know, and it has dash by a lot, which could certainly suppress the BTC-USD pair. And he's right on that. Like, you can look at Bitcoin right. like Argentina, you know, BTC ARS or whatever.
Oh yeah, right. You're still in good shape even with the crashes. If your unit of account is pesos, like you're in good shape.
Here we go. No, they don't have it.
That's a tough chart to find, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. I've only seen it once or twice, but
well, we can just go BTC Turkish lira. Let's see if that. I don't know if they have it.
Yeah, I haven't. I haven't seen too many of more of the.
Oh, there it goes. We have it. Yes.
Yeah. So in lira terms, like you're like pretty close to all time highs again, which is insane.
They did make new all time highs.
Yeah, like that's insane when you really think about it. So
it's just different pairs.
Is Bitcoin super volatile? If you live in Turkey, like it's almost like you might as well hold Bitcoin. It's very fascinating
Bitcoin,
that
British
these currencies
pound.
Fluctuate. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, JPY though is pretty interesting.
Yeah, you can, and it's funny when you look at these charts in different
1 million
denominated. Yeah,
in 1 million. Denominations. That was a big deal. Yeah, 1 million.
Oh,
when
measured in yen.
Yeah, it's like one. Yeah. When that was a big deal, like breaking through 1 million again. It's like 1 million. Like think about that though. Like I can get 1 million yen. A Bitcoin gives me 1 million yen, and I don't know how they're pricing, but still, I mean that's like still pretty crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
Exactly. At least it sounds like a lot when it's like, I don't know, 14 grand, 12 grand USD, something like that. It's probably lower than that, actually.
I guess it's like kind of something to shoot the shit on or speculate on. Is like, have you given any thought to like what you might do in the next bull run?
I have no clue.
I think about it every single day.
I mean, okay, there's things I think about, but like, I just try not to. I just realize you just kind of like things happen and things change pretty quickly. So I don't, you know, and that's why I just kind of, I don't know. It's hard to speculate, you know, what can change. So I just that's how I live, because things change pretty rapidly. I think 2017 is pretty retarded. It was like, oh, wow. You know, things change really quickly. Like I never thought it would go that far, that fast. Like when I first got in, I was like, you know, this won't happen. And then it kind of started happening. And then it was like, oh, shit, this is actually happening. Right. So it's just one of those things. It can, you know, so I just, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah, no, it's really tough. It's really tough. I think it's more just like, I have no emotions. Yeah, it's funny because I went through so many struggles in 2017 trying to trade and deal with all the headaches and the nonsense and realizing I like had no business doing that. And then now I think about it. I think about
I was a stacker in 2017. It worked out pretty well.
Don't get me wrong.
I think the best part was we talked about this before in an earlier podcast was like how much Bitcoin you bought, like 2 grand, 1,000. Just buying Bitcoin at really low numbers and not thinking about it, and then at 20x's or 10x's on you or 5x's, while your altcoin just dies and BTC value and goes flat or dies in USD, to only pump like 40x later, you know, or 50x, and you know, just some ridiculous number in USD, you know. But it's just an interesting, you know, at the time, you know, no one thought Bitcoin would just keep running, but it did.
Yeah, no, I think that's your boomer bucks went a long way when you were buying Bitcoin at $2,000. Like you could get yourself a decent amount of sats, and like now I just think about it so much differently. And you know, a lot of this stuff for me is like with Bitcoin in particular, like I feel like the most gains I'll see is by doing nothing and stacking. And I think
that's a pretty okay way to go about it, because I think I
It's
think a
hard
lot
to
of people
outperform,
realize.
right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people. Well, I think like you just look at it in terms of markets. People do really well. We just, keep. If they have faith in some sort of asset, and they keep buying, even
Right.
when there's, pain and misery, like the Warren Buffett style of value investing, I guess is the best way to
Right.
put it.
Like you're just adding to your position
Yeah.
and sticking to your conviction. And I think that's where like everybody gets to that point. And it could be with any asset. It could be with buying Apple stock. It could be with buying gold. It could be with buying Bitcoin, where you've either studied something enough, you have enough conviction in something, or you think you have asymmetric information in the market. And I know, and I don't know if I sent you this, but like this Ray Dalio quote of like a little clip of him talking about blockchain, and just listening to him talk about blockchain, I know he has no clue what he's talking about, which is like it makes me feel so bullish though, because I'm like, okay, I know this is a highly intelligent individual. He's made a ton of money trading markets, a fantastic investor. I understand why you'd want to take it as advice. And you can see when someone has absolutely no clue what they're talking about, especially when it comes to very complex things like Bitcoin and technology. So me personally, right, I think the only reason I'm buying Bitcoin is I think it's worth more than the price of it today. So like I'm gonna buy it because people like Ray Dalio are talking nonsense about blockchains pretty cool. Like it's this thing, and I'm like, I know you don't know,
Bro, it is storming out there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
It's no, it's
Does it make you bullish when you hear people just talk bullshit about something? You're like, all right, this guy doesn't know what they're talking about. It makes me bullish.
Yeah, no, it no, in a sense, yeah, you're just like, wow, some people just like, well, I think when people make stupid amount of money, they it you just kind of you assume you're right on a lot of things. It's just it
Yeah,
happens. It's you
right.
can't blame the guy. He's worth I don't know how many billions of dollars. He's done pretty well. So
Oh,
I'm
no,
not gonna
for sure.
it's like but no, it's like as I was saying earlier, everything's getting pretty ridiculous now when you look at some of these equity indexes too. And did you read that thing about Warren Buffett the other day about his like put options he wrote or something like that? Like in
No.
He wrote some put options like in the financial crisis or something like that. Like it was 2009 or 2008 or something like that. Like late 2008 or late 2009. On like, I think it was like, I think it might have been the DAX. There was obviously, I think there was the S&P and like, then there was also like, what's the London one? Is it Eurostoxx?
I
Or
forget. I don't know.
FTSE is your or England, and then which is London, I'm pretty sure, and then. Eurostoxx thinks France, if I remember correctly. I might be wrong on that. But anyways, it's like he wrote all these options that have just been paying him just a ridiculous amount. And like it works that like it's some special OTC option because it had to be guaranteed by like fucking special banks because it was so much money. It's fucking it was like a couple $1 billion worth of options. I don't
That's
even know how
insane.
that it's just some special thing. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. What do you think? Is that a good way to wrap this one
Yeah, I
up?
think it's a good way to end that one right there.
All right. So this was episode 54 of the Beef and Bitcoin podcast. Make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Send us a DM. Let us know what you want us to talk about. And yeah, keep stacking those sats and stack responsibly.
Yeah.
Peace.